It's one of the private chapels of the popes, located in the Papal Palace, just down the hall from the Sistine Chapel. As the Pope's private chapel, it's normally off-limits to the public, and even to Vatican personnel like me. But after restoration work on the Pauline Chapel finished in June 2009, some of us had the perhaps once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to go up and take a peek at it, and at Michelangelo's two huge frescoes adorning its walls. The sweep of the nave and the white stuccoed reliefs framing Michelangelo's massive, colorful paintings left me breathless. The chapel takes its name from Pope Paul III, who in 1537 commissioned Antonio da Sangallo the Younger to build it for his personal use and for holding conclaves. Pope Paul asked Michelangelo to decorate the central parts of the two long walls with frescoes. Michelangelo was putting his last touches to the Sistine Chapel when Paul told him to paint the first fresco, the Conversion of St. Paul, which he began in 1542. In an unusual juxtaposition of themes, the Italian master painted the second fresco, the Martyrdom of St. Peter, between 1546 and 1550. By then, Michelangelo was an old man who probably felt like he was being torn in wildly different directions. He was asked to design the grandiose plaza on Rome's Capitoline Hill, complete the Farnese Palace, and upon the death of the architect Sangallo, he was charged by Paul III with designing St. Peter's Basilica. In his book, The Lives of the Artists, his friend and biographer Giorgio Vasari wrote, "These two frescoes were Michelangelo's last." He told me, Vasari wrote, that it took him a great effort to finish them. Of the Sistine Chapel's Last Judgment, Vasari wrote that Michelangelo's masterpiece had rendered to the world
the great exemplar of the grand manner of painting, directly inspired by God, and enabling mankind to see the fateful results when an artist of sublime intellect infused with divine grace and knowledge appears on earth.
As he did in the Sistine Chapel, Michelangelo packs the Pauline Chapel frescoes with figures whose muscular bodies are revealed under tightly bound tunics and drapery, their forms so similar to the sculpted figures he loved to draw out from marble.
The best of artists hath no thought to show, which the rough stone in its superfluous shell doth not include. To break the marble spell is all the hand that serves the brain can do.
Here, Michelangelo unveils sculpture-like figures in the Conversion of Paul, who falls from his horse to the ground, struck and blinded by a thunderbolt sent from Christ himself in heaven. The fresco is packed with people who, through their movements, create a sense of depth in a plain green and blue landscape. The city of Damascus, Paul's destination, off in the distance. Facing this fresco on the opposite side of the nave, St. Peter, who is fixed to a cross, about to be raised and crucified upside down. Unlike the lofty figures adorning the Sistine Chapel, so far out of our reach, Peter here is close, staring straight at us. Also here, the scene is packed with people, soldiers and onlookers, even a fellow finishing the digging beneath St. Peter so that the cross can be planted in the soil. I didn't go to the Pauline Chapel by myself. I had one of the best guides you can ask for. The chief art historian responsible for the restoration project, Professor Arnold Nesselrath from the Vatican Museums. I asked him, a bit naively, when the Pope uses the Pauline Chapel. After all, Pope John Paul II preferred to celebrate Mass and pray in the modern Redemptoris Mater Chapel, next to the papal apartments. Where is the Pauline Chapel in the palace anyway?
Where the chapel of Redemptoris Mater is on the second floor, i.e. on the floor of the state rooms of the Holy Father, where he receives people in private audience. The Pauline Chapel is on the same level as the Sistine Chapel, and both are connected by the huge Sala Regia, the royal hall, or however you want to translate this, i.e. the hall where the Pope meets the always met the most important visitors. That's why it's the royal hall, and where he even always receives at the beginning of the year the diplomatic corps to celebrate the beginning of the new year. The Pauline Chapel is the so-called minor palace chapel, while the Sistine Chapel is the major palace chapel. And the major palace chapel does not have a tabernacle, so the Holy Sacrament is kept in the Pauline Chapel. And therefore, the two also have to be connected somehow. You have to be able to get from the one to the other during a liturgical celebration. The Chapel of the Holy Sacrament is one function of the Pauline Chapel. The other for which it was built was that in the Pauline Chapel, in the minor chapel, up to the year 1670, the votes were cast during the conclave. And the newly elected pontifex was venerated on the altar of the Pauline Chapel. That function changed and moved to the Sistine Chapel only in 1670, when the Collegiate of Cardinals became so big that they did not fit into the Pauline Chapel anymore. But the two chapels are closely interlinked, and those were the two functions, and the Chapel of the Holy Sacrament is the function that the chapel still has to the present day.
And how many? You said that the whole College of Cardinals could not fit into the Pauline Chapel at one point. How many people can be accommodated in there?
When a Mass is celebrated in the Pauline Chapel, I think the capacity is up to 80 to 100 people that can sit on the benches that will be put up again in the chapel. But of course, during the conclave, the cardinals would sit along the walls, and that's also a reason why the dado of these walls is so high, so they could put in the stalls with the baldachin, and this function in some way conditioned also the architecture that Antonio da San Gallo the Younger had to design.
The St. Paul and St. Peter frescoes face each other on parallel walls, and we, the visitor, find ourselves stuck in between them. We too become part of the dialogue.
The only figure that has eye contact to the visitor is St. Peter. He's the only figure that's looking at the visitor, and he is the Pope. He is the Vicar of Christ on earth, and he's the one through whom the visitor enters these scenes. But there is this interrelationship between the two frescoes, which is not the traditional pairing, but it's the first step, which is the conversion, and it's the second step, which is the crucifixion.
Pope Paul III obviously made a very personal choice when he decided which scenes he wanted Michelangelo to depict. What message did Paul want to get across to the visitor through the conversion of Paul and the martyrdom of Peter? What does one think about standing in this chapel? For me, it seemed as if Michelangelo and Pope Paul were drawing a circle from the beginning of belief in Christ and the spreading of the good word through apostles like Paul to the end, the ultimate sacrifice, the willingness to give up one's life for that belief, and the knowledge that that belief will continue to the end of time.
I'm sure this is important in this. Now, we mustn't forget this is a chapel where the new pope is being elected. And during the election, the Collegiate of Cardinals is accompanied by the two princes of the apostles, of whom one becomes the vicar of Christ, not the other one. That's what's also then happening to the cardinals who choose one from their middle to become the new pope. And then it's a question of who sees, because Paul is blinded by conversion and Peter is seeing through martyrdom. So there is also a process here that goes across from one fresco to the other and then ends up with a visitor that's chosen by Peter to be looked at.
Exactly, because one thing that does hit you when you won't go into that chapel is Peter is staring directly at you.
Yeah, and this is an experience that each visitor has who comes into the chapel. Now, that's also, of course, an experience that every cardinal had who entered the chapel when they were going to elect a new pope. And I think this is something that's also very important for the understanding of the two frescoes in this context, and then those are the two who guarantee also the respect for the Holy Sacrament.
Professor Arnold Nesselrath is the chief art historian from the Vatican Museums responsible for overseeing the recent restoration of the Pauline Chapel. A very warm thanks to him.